KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A federal judge finds the Trump-Musk mass firings of federal probationary workers to likely be unlawful. Judge William Alsup in San Francisco says the Office of Personnel Management has zero authority and orders the head of the office to testify in court in 2 weeks. Labor unions and other groups sued. Discussing the Russian-Ukraine war, President Trump and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer at the White House.
The disaster in Ukraine shows exactly why it's so important for the United Kingdom and other NATO partners to make large investments in their defense capabilities. In many cases, 4% or 5% of GDP would be appropriate.
At least 13 people injured when a car rammed into a bus stop in northern Israel. Israeli officials say the driver was a Palestinian from the West Bank. Police investigating the deaths of Oscar winner Gene Hackman, his wife, and a dog in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Bodies found on the floor of their home. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
The Packers willing to trade. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, where it's been reported the Packers are taking offers to trade away defensive back Jair Alexander. He was a first-round pick for the Pack in 2018. Green Bay has not drafted a receiver in the first round in over 20 years. Why not? GM Brian Gutekunst.
You know, it's funny. It's never been like a philosophical thing we've talked about through my time in Green Bay. It's never been something, hey, like we don't want to take wide receivers in the first round. There are certainly opportunities we've had. We thought that was going to happen, and for whatever reason, it didn't. But at the same time, we've had a lot of second-round receivers that have been pretty good players for us.
NBA, the Bucks face the Denver Nuggets tonight at Fiserv Forum. Brooke Lopez on defending Denver center Nikola Jokic.
You know, I'll be on the point of attack a bit, doing my job, just try to be physical with him, make things as difficult as possible as you can for him, and trusting I got my teammates behind me.
That's the Bucks' Brooke Lopez. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Todd Alba Show.
Elon Musk putting in so much money that it drowns out other people's voices to decide who our next Supreme Court justice is. Whether or not you're going to vote Republican or Democrat or Schimmel or Crawford, your voice is getting drowned out by Elon Musk, a guy who has no business in Wisconsin. And you don't think that Brad Schimmel is going to be in Elon Musk's pocket? It's going to affect us in Wisconsin.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Republicans got their wet dream list. Their budget resolution. It passed. Every Democrat voted against it. Good on them. And every Republican, sans one, voted for it. And understand, the guy who voted for it, he didn't think it was bad enough. He wanted it to be worse. So no credit for Thomas Massey for standing up for working people. No. He wanted it worse. It wasn't deep. It wasn't painful enough to get Thomas Massey's vote. So Republicans did what they said they were going to do. They got their resolution through the House. And what's it going to do? It's going to gut Medicaid. It's going to gut SNAP benefits. It's going to leave millions of people, well, screwed. And also, going to make sure that rich people they get their tax breaks, because that's what's really important. That's the really important part, that rich people get their tax breaks. Screw granny, the heck with those poor working people, the heck with the poor people. Understand, and this is one of those things that is quite, it's kind of shocking, about 72 million people get their health coverage through Medicaid. 72 million people. Almost half of the babies born in this country. Remember, I know, you baby lovers, you know, the pro-life people. This is something you should be jumping on. Almost half of the babies born in this country are born with Medicaid, footing the bill. This should be one of those things you're going, if you're pro-life, Because understand, without the medical care that, that these folks get, the prenatal care that is already badly done in this country, for, especially for low-wage women and working-class women, this should be one of those areas you go, no, don't cut that. We love the babies. But you're not hearing that. You're hearing champions because everyone thinks, I'm going to get my Doji dollars. And understand, Medicaid is the nation's largest payer for health services, mental health services, you know, for substance abuse, for a whole bunch of mental problems that we seem to be having a lot more of. And let's not forget nursing homes. Let's not forget the number of people who get nursing care in their final days because of Medicaid. Now, I know the Republicans are going to say, well, you know, we don't mean those. We mean the waste, fraud, and abuse. Because when Trump was asked about it, Trump said, you know, I can't believe you're even asking me this. You know, I've said it's not going to happen. Trust me. Trust me. Yeah, trust me. I can't believe you're even asking me. It's not going to happen, but we're going to go after the fraudulent stuff. You know, like Granny needing nursing care. Because as the folks who deal with nursing homes, as they're saying, they're screwed. Nursing homes are going to bear the brunt of the pain. Because those folks are generally voiceless. And they generally don't have the energy to go marching on Capitol Hill. And some of them don't vote. So they're an easy target. They're a vulnerable target. And this is what's really disgraceful about the Republican Party, the people who tell me how much they care about life. I guess it depends on where in your life is when they care. If you're of childbearing years, they care. But as we learned during the pandemic, you hit a certain age, we can do without you. Going to cut, $880 billion from Medicaid over the next decade, which is about a 10% cut every year. That's a substantial cut, especially when you look at the reality is that Medicaid should be doing a lot more. And for me, there's part of me that goes, you know, maybe we need this because maybe we don't know. Maybe there's too many of us who don't know how attached we are to SNAP benefits and to Medicaid, especially in rural America, especially in my neck of the woods, where poverty is a real thing and the government checks come at the beginning of the month and the health care that a lot of people get is through Medicaid. You know, I know my rural red hat friends didn't think it was going to be them, but this is who this is targeted at. Those SNAP benefits that feed people, millions of people. They're gutting. And why? Because evidently we need more tax cuts for rich people. That's all I can come up with. Now, I do kind of agree that Democrats should be able to use this. Will they? I don't know. It will be interesting to see how they use this. I know there have been some emails that have gone out. And there's some online organizing. And I'm all in favor of that. But I think you need to see the faces. I think you need to go into those red districts. I think you need to go in there and talk to those people who are now, how did my friend put it, S-ing bricks? Because, that means we don't get health care. We don't get food for the end of the month. It's going to be interesting. Trump had his first cabinet meeting, the big love fest between dear Donald and Elon Musk, which he said, you know, everyone's thrilled with Elon. Everyone's not only happy, he said, they're thrilled. Thrilled. And what edict has come down? Well, the edict is more people are going to get fired. Evidently, the Trump administration has given federal agencies until the middle of March, I think it's the 13th, to dream up an idea of how they're going to fire a bunch of people. They're going to slash federal workers. And I love the framing. We're going to focus on maximum elimination. And that will be things that aren't specifically required by law. If it's not specifically written that we need someone doing this job, gut it. And what they're saying is that could be about 700,000 employees. So if when the government shuts down because there's no money, it's about 700,000 people. They're looking to fire all of those folks. OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, has already moved to do some. General Services Administration. A bunch of organizations have already sent out their reduction in force notices to thousands of people. I know because I have lots of people sending me, hey, I didn't think it was me. The EPA. They say that they're planning on slashing the EPA by 65%. Now, remember, campaign time, when we were saying this was what's going to happen? Do you remember during the campaign when we said Project 2025 is real and Elon Musk thinks he's going to be able to do to government what he did to Twitter? Well, this means that you're going to be impacted by this. When they gut a large portion of the Social Security Administration, it means Granny's not going to get her benefits in a timely manner. And I know there are people who are going to for 150 years. But this is going to make people's lives more difficult. And if you think things are online now, if you're like me, tired of the self-checkout and the self-check-in and the self-do-this and the self-do-this everywhere you go, and the press one for anything, it's only going to get worse. And oh, by the way, in the first 30 days that Donald Trump was in office, he spent 9 of those days playing golf. How do we get him to do the other 21 days and stop this chaos? Because the sad reality is real people are going to be harmed by this. And my mind goes back to a woman I met back in 2011 when Tom Corbett, the governor of Pennsylvania, was going after Medicaid and going after social programs for the poor. There was a woman in a wheelchair who said, if they're going to kill me, they're going to have to watch me die in public. This is where we need to be. We need to be in public. We need to be standing square in front of the camera and let them look in our eyes and see the pain and the suffering that they're causing. This is what Democrats, and I argue the labor movement, should be pursuing. That's why when we take a break, we'll come back with Jimmy Williams Jr., the president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. He's got some ideas on what we should be doing next. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So as Musk and Trump set out to gut federal employment, you have to ask, how are the workers and their representatives going to respond to all of this? I know a lot of my labor friends who were around during the Patco era when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. They wish they'd responded maybe just a little differently. So when I saw my next guest's response to Donald Trump's tweeting out, quote, he who saves his country does not violate any law. I said, here's a leader. And he is the general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT, IUPAT.org, their website. Jimmy Williams Jr., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for having me, man.
So what's the response? What is the response to Trump's tweet?
Yeah, well, I think I tweeted something out to the effect of, you know, if we, you know, encounter the Donald Trump statements and they're coming fast and furious, and we knew that was going to happen. But, you know, hey, let's have a real talk about, is it time for us to show the country what the working class is really about? And, you know, I've always been a proponent of having the dialogue around, listen, if we got to do something as a movement, maybe now's the time to say, let's pull our resources together and let's walk off the job, just like other developed countries in this world have done, to send a message for what the working class truly needs. And, you know, do it around the issues that we need as a country, and do it as one, do it as a movement, show that we are a movement in response to what are the largest attacks. Hey, we have everything right in front of us to fight for. You know, you're watching $4.5 trillion, if not more, in tax cuts that are going to cut the social safety nets in this country. Let's strike for expanded Social Security. Let's strike for Medicare for all. Let's strike for expanding labor law protections in the PRO Act. Let's strike for protecting our federal government employees who are literally being destroyed daily, right? I mean, they are giving us a reason to show what the working class in this country can do by withholding our labor and by showing them what a working class movement can be, unlike this one that is masked in nationalism and fascism.
Yeah, no, look, the reality is the old labor frame of an injury to one being an injury to all. I've been saying, look at what they're doing to the federal workforce, and that is going to trickle down. So when you're ready for that to happen to you, just let this go. But we're at a moment where we're watching in real time what our future is going to be as a working class.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Rick, even just the most unprecedented move of removing the sitting NLRB chairperson without cause and without due process. The NLRB is there to protect workers who are wrongfully dismissed and wrongfully fired, and the President of the United States is going to remove an NLRB chairperson without any sort of reason. We should be striking for that, to get the NLRB back up and running and not being handed over to Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, who don't want to have their cases heard and don't want to have the precedent set.
Now, I'm sure you're hearing people, because I'm getting responses from people, well, you know, they're just trying to make government better. You buying any of that?
No. You know what they're trying to do? They're trying to strip government so they can privatize it and make more money off of government contracts for corporations in this country. You know, just the simple fact of trying to privatize the postal service is the next move. You know, that's the plan. It's to replace people with AI and corporate-controlled government. And that's what's happening right before our very eyes, man. That's the plan. There's too much money to be made off of this. And listen, corporations win every single time when they're in power like this.
So
and the only response to corporate power is to show them worker power.
Now, you talked about, you know, obviously worker power being a wildcat general strike, which is what your response was, to demand the passage of the PRO Act, raising the minimum wage, providing health care for all. A lot of the things that I think now people are starting to maybe pay a little bit of attention to, especially in Republican districts, now that Republicans are told to no longer hold town hall meetings. Is this an opportunity for the labor movement to step in? Because I've been saying Democrats should just leave Washington altogether, adopt a Republican, go to their district, hold hearings, create those moments for people to express their anger. Is this an opportunity maybe for labor to step in and do that?
Look, I've been saying it since the day after Election Day. It's the time for the labor movement to set the agenda for working class people in this country, because neither party can get it right. The Democrats can't get it right, and the Republicans can't get it right. The Democrats had every opportunity to raise the minimum wage, too. The Democrats have had every opportunity to propose changes to retirement and Social Security and Medicare, right? And couldn't get it done. Democrats have had every opportunity, and you and I have spoken about it a number of times, to change the labor laws in this country to give the working class more power. I mean, that's the reality, right? The labor movement's the only movement that has ever achieved real gains for the working class in this country. So the moment and the opportunity is perfect. It's right now.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I've gotten a little back and forth with my union's president, Sean O'Brien, over his support for Republicans and, you know, this move towards, you know, Trumpism a little bit. During the election, we were told that Trump was going to be, you know, the working class president. How these first, you know, these first 4 weeks, how are they working out for us?
Yeah, right. I think it's pretty obvious that. You know, as always, the Trump con job is real. You know, there's no agenda there to actually support working families. You know, at the end of the day, who's going to pay for this? And all this talk about government waste, yet we're going to cut taxes $4.5 trillion. All you got to do is raise taxes on the billionaire class in this country, and you can pay for the services that are needed to provide real support for the working class. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. But this has been a time-honored debate. And moving further and further to the right and moving further and further to the Trump agenda is not going to help the working class in this country. Let's be honest. And rebuilding our labor movement from the ground up and from our membership up is going to be what builds worker power again in this country. And it's always been that way. And it's just time for us to get it right and stop relying on politicians from either party to be the one to try to set that agenda.
What do you say to someone who's like me, who would go, you know, here in this country, we don't have, I think, an appropriate level of class consciousness. We all talk about the middle class, that I never use that term. I always use working class, because I think the middle class is something that we've constructed to tear us apart from being workers. But I'm curious of your thoughts of how that happens when we're not as class conscious as maybe we should be.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when we're not. And maybe there was a utopian time period for certain people in the working class when the union movement was at its strongest in the late 40s, 50s, and maybe early 60s, right? Those days are gone. Those days are long gone. I talked to our members. Our members, you know, why was inflation such a big issue to our members? They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're living with two incomes in their house, and they can't save for their own kids' future education. They can't make their bills if they're out of work for 2 weeks. You know, times are tough. And you know, this whole notion that there's three different classes, the upper class, the middle class, and you know, it's bullshit. There's literally the working class of this country, and our working class people haven't gotten a break in generations.
So this is, do you see this potentially as an opportunity? Because look, I've been more optimistic than most of my friends or colleagues on this moment. I'm going, look, they're going to do a lot of bad stuff. There's going to be suffering. Their savagery will cause suffering, but out of that, solutions will come and organizing opportunities will present themselves. I think this is a perfect moment to do the education that needs to be done, to bring members back to their union, to bring workers back to the working class, and to really build a militant movement going forward. Because it's amazing to me that any person who punches a clock for a living would look to the richest guy in the world for solutions.
Yeah, right. Now, it is amazing, but it also shows you that class consciousness has somewhat is somewhat a thing of the past, and it's our duty and our responsibility as a union movement to re-educate our members. And, you know, it starts from within. And within our union, we've launched the largest ever member education drive that we've ever done in response to this, because we have to build that class consciousness back in our members first. And before we reach out to members, you know, to non-members, we gotta have a strong, solid foundation. Well, at the end of the day, the labor movement couldn't be stopped by either political party if we stuck together as one. You know, every politician be beating down our door for our members' votes and for our members' support. That's the movement we got to build, and we got to show that to the rest of the country and how we act. And the days of having solidarity and taking care of one another. Like, it's fundamental core values that we need to get back to. It's unionism 101, man.
No, I say all the time, you know, every generation has to rediscover what solidarity means. And I think we're at that moment. So give me some bit of hope as one of the union presidents leading one of the 51 major unions in this country. Is there a direction? Are we looking towards a future? I don't want you to give me all the, you know, the backroom stuff, but, you know, is there something coming maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's that fundamental notion that we are at an inflection point. And I think everybody knows that the working class in this country is divided. The only movement that can unite the working class is the labor movement.
Right.
And so everything's on the table. Everything has to be on the table because we are in a position where we know how to organize. Nobody else knows how to organize working class people like we do. And that's why you have to put on the table things like a general strike, like breaking the law if need be, when the laws are so broken. You know, we need to educate this country on the working class's war that they've been under for generations. And it starts now.
Yeah, because the anger is real. And look, you know,
it is.
We talked about this yesterday on the program, and I thought my guest had the perfect point. He said the anger was really ramped up after the pandemic when we gave people a little bit of money that they had, they were able to put in the bank, had a little bit of security, and inflation eroded that away. And now they remember how insecure they were. And now they're angry. And it's not red hat, blue hat. It's every working class person who's struggling to put food on the table. And this is why I say there's a major opportunity here to reach those folks.
Yeah, and there was an opportunity then too, you know, during the pandemic, for those workers that didn't have the benefit of a union to be able to be represented by a union in what was the hardest time for the working class, when all you heard was our essential workers are heroes, right? That went away the minute we opened up our country again and workers went back to work under the system that we have right now, right? We missed that inflection point. Let's not miss this one.
Not only did that go away, because I know most people are not remembering the heroes and the frontline heroes and all that stuff. We're now talking about dividing ourselves based on Elon Musk coming up with a Saturday idea of you tell me what you did last week by the end of the day or you're all fired. And us eating each other over that, the number of responses I've gotten from people saying, well, I have to do this and, you know, I have to justify without thinking that government already has people who oversee these employees. It's not at the whim of some billionaire or half a trillionaire to decide how things are done. There is a mechanism in place, but we're eating each other over it.
Absolutely. But when that happens, you know, is the moment to educate, to agitate, and to organize, right? We find ourselves in that moment yet again. Like you said, we found ourselves there with PACO. We found ourselves there with NAFTA. We found ourselves there with the Great Recession of 2008. We found ourselves there with the pandemic in 2020. And here we are again. And it's up to us as leaders to organize, to educate, and to agitate.
Yep.
That's what we do. And this movement's got to do it.
Yeah, last question I've got for you, because I want to give some folks some hope. You know, what can we do? Give me something. Give me some hope. Jimmy Williams Jr. is going to bring some hope for me in the class war.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think hope is always there because there's so much to strive for. And all we have to do is lean into those core, fundamental, basic values of unionism 101. Solidarity for one another. We got to operate as one. We got to organize as one. We're going to have so many opportunities over the next 4 years to show how broken the system is. And you want to talk about how you build class consciousness? It's going to be on display every day for the next 4 years. It's only been less than 100 days since Donald Trump took office. Look at all of the things that have been done just in the first 30 to 60 days. You don't think that's going to continue? That to me is an organizer's dream.
No.
You got the richest man in the world standing over top of our federal government, pulling every trick out of the playbook that is used against workers every day, from Amazon all the way through to Starbucks. Like, this is what takes place in corporate America. And if you want your country to be controlled by corporate America, then I don't know what to tell you other than organize.
No, but here's the thing. I know I said last question, but you opened this window. All before the campaign, all I kept hearing is, I want government run like a business. I want a businessman running things. Well, is this not what business government looks like?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And you know what? At the end of the day, you're going to get hurt, just like we've been hurt as workers in a business-controlled economy now for the last 60 years, right? I mean, that's that class consciousness you talk about. And listen, many times people have been fooled. Right? Let's not kid ourselves. We've been fooled by our politicians on both sides, the left and the right. Yeah. And the only way to fight back is to fight fire with fire. And I'm telling you, this is the moment to educate our workforce.
Yep. Find Obama's comfortable shoes and get out in the streets. But Jimmy Williams Jr., I appreciate the time. Always great hearing from you. I hope you'll come back again real soon.
Thanks, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Is he right? Maybe now's the time. Because I got to tell you, in 50 years, I don't want to hear people going, well, you know, we should have done something different. Not that I'll be around, but you know what I'm saying. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio. Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, a low close to 30 and becoming breezy. Wind advisory for tomorrow, gusts higher than 40 miles an hour at times, maybe a rain or snow shower, highs near 40, then falling temps in the afternoon. Cooler for the weekend. Currently it's 26.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Folks, I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic cuts to the NIH.
The National Institutes of Health, the state receives almost $600 million. That pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in 1 year.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I had a hysterical conversation today, you know, and it was one of those things where, you know, nice guy, you know, sitting in a waiting room, you know, waiting to for an appointment, and the bureaucracy. This guy was gleeful that we're going after the deep state and the bureaucracy and it's these federal employees. And in my mind, as this guy was talking, my mind was like, before yesterday, did you know the word bureaucracy? Because this seems to be where Republicans are putting all of their hatred. It's in the federal workforce. It's the bureaucracy. It's the red tape people. And look, you got Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, saying, look, we've identified it. The bureaucracy, that's the deep state we've been talking about. And he said, Elon has cracked the code. And Elon's now inside the agencies. He's created algorithms that are consistently crawling through the data. And as he told me in his office, the data doesn't lie. Is this what you signed up for? Giving Elon access to everything? Even if it is going after the dreaded deep state bureaucracy? I don't know. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on all of this and much, much more, I've asked my good friend Jeff Hauser to come share some thoughts. He's the executive director of the Revolving Door Project. You can check out their work over at therevolvingdoorproject.org. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here.
We now know who the deep state is, Jeff. It's the bureaucracy. It's the dreaded bureaucracy. It's that woman on the phone helping Granny get her Social Security. That's the deep state.
I mean, you bring up Social Security, and that's apropos because there was a report today confirming actually my like dark conspiracy theory seeming from like late November, which is that Elon Musk is going to go after the Social Security Administration. There are indications that they're planning to fire half of the staff. David Dayen at the American Prospect had a great article, very worrisome article, but important article about that just this afternoon. What do the people at the Social Security Administration do? Well, they make sure that people get the Social Security that they're owed. They look into Social Security disability. there is almost no fraud, and yet people get what they need. They don't deny fraud by denying everything. People get the services they require, and there is literally less than like half a percentage point of fraud, which I'll assure you is much better than what is the rate going on at much of the private sector, much of the companies that are reliant on things like artificial intelligence. The Social Security Administration works. It works with actually too few people right now. So if you cut half of it, it is going to work much less well. And the cost of the people who work at the Social Security Administration are infinitesimally small compared to the amounts of sums that they handle so reliably. So we're going to introduce a lot of errors. We're going to get a lot of denials of Social Security and Social Security disability benefits to people who deserve them. And it's going to be chaos. And it's all going to be because Elon Musk is trying to replace human beings with his crappy artificial intelligence.
But you said there's a small amount of fraud. But you know, I got to tell you, I saw a Facebook post. There was a Facebook post, Jeff. There are millions of people, 150 years old, still collecting Social Security to this day. They've been collecting for 150 years, Jeff.
Yes, there actually is kind of a conspiracy here, but it's between a combination of tech evangelists who aren't very competent and willful morons. And the ironic thing is they do things like turbocharge algorithms on Facebook to spread lies like the 150-year-old Social Security recipient. And they don't understand that in the programming language used at the Social Security Administration, there's certain, like if there's certain data missing or something isn't right, it'll default to saying someone's 150, but there's no money going to these people. But there are people in the system, it's just like artifacts of incomplete data. Like you start entering the data and it doesn't go all the way through. And trust me, this happens in everything. I literally spent my Saturday for our Little League. We're evaluating the new players in the league and you have to go through and keep track of them for everything. And you know, sometimes the data is not perfect. And so sometimes the data defaults to certain numbers. So basically everyone who actually understands computer programming was laughing at the idea that this 150-year-old people, that meant anything, especially since no money was going to them. But yeah, those lies or those like wild misstatements and the dishonest inference that these people are getting money, that's being spread by morons using moronic algorithms that just basically underscore that Elon Musk is hiring programmers who don't know how to program.
No, but if you believe that, you certainly are going to believe the fact that, you know, if you register to vote multiple times in different places, that means you're voting. And that by having more people on the voting rolls, that somehow all of those people are voting just because they're on the rolls, which again is another one of those I don't even bother trying to explain anymore.
Yeah. It turns out that sometimes in America, people move and they don't bother to deregister to vote in the place that they're leaving because they know they're never going to bother to vote there again.
Yeah. Boy,
in America, people move. Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew? And people don't break the law. Yeah. But this is one of these weird things that, you know, this information, this data keeps being misused in very bizarre ways. And, you know, Mike Johnson's statement that, you know, Elon's now setting up these algorithms that are crawling through all the data, looking for these certain things that repeatedly seem to turn out to be not factual or accurate, tells me that it's not about good governance. It's not even about smart spending or fiscal responsibility. It's more about destroying the beast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Doge like proudly listed like the money that they're saving, and beyond the fact that there were lots of lies, like a lot of lies, 40% of the contracts that they said that they were cutting were already had stopped, spent, like they were finished. That's like saying, you know, you have a car, you paid it off 3 years ago. We are going to end the contract to pay more money on that car. You haven't accomplished anything.
Right.
But the five largest savings have since been deleted. Their top five ostensible savings were all made up, and so made up that they, like, even Doge is embarrassed and has deleted those claims. They're top five. These are such fundamentally unserious people. They are so unserious that I think people really should not get into another Tesla. I would certainly not launch anything on a SpaceX rocket. How can you trust anything associated with Elon Musk when every time he tweets or every time Doge takes an action, it is clear that he is ignorant, arrogant, and unconstrained by accuracy?
No, he said, look, you should be checking all this stuff. I'm going to make mistakes. It's your job, Jeff. It's the media's job to go out there and check this stuff, to hold him accountable.
Yeah, I mean, like, what media, now that the Associated Press is no longer allowed anywhere because they're referring to the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of Mexico? But it's crazy, because part of what makes government, to the extent to which government can be frustrating and slow, a lot of it is because government is so important that its services cannot fail and they cannot experiment.
Right.
SpaceX, consistently its rockets fail, even if they eventually start succeeding, but they fail several times before that. Tesla really almost died and would have died but for the intervention of President Barack Obama. You can risk that in the private sector. And sometimes, a lot of times, you'll end up bankrupt and just go nowhere. But if you get lucky, you can become Elon Musk in the private sector. We can't take those risks with America's healthcare, with the safety of America's workforce, with the safety of our food. We cannot be taking these risks with our international relationships, our alliances, and yet we are. This private sector risk taking is wildly inapplicable to government. We need government to be safe. And if that means occasionally it is slow and careful, that is good, because we're seeing what happens when you take a break things first, ask questions later approach.
No, it's a perfect place where I wanted to go, because I've seen Marjorie Taylor Greene running around saying, you know, federal workers don't deserve their jobs. Federal workers don't deserve their paychecks. You know, they don't bring any revenue into the government. These aren't real jobs. And this is a moment, I think, as we watch them do what they're doing, and they're going to do it. They're going to destroy things. They're going to break stuff. But there's an opportunity here for Democrats to go, look, this is why you don't, one, put these people in charge of government, but two, begin to talk about why government's important, and maybe an education process. Because as I've been saying, I think Democrats should just leave D.C., go adopt a Republican district, hold hearings in that district, live in that Republican area, and listen to their complaints as the suffering trickles down to them from all the things Musk and his little Doge ferrets are doing. I think that's the way forward. But I think Republicans are giving Democrats an opportunity.
Yeah, my friend Rashed Saheed had a really good idea. Because Republicans are getting annihilated in their town halls, in their districts, when they bother to hold them, people are complaining about everything that Elon Musk is doing and the pain that is already being felt in America, even as the pain is just a fraction of what it's going to be like in the future. The Republican National Committee is recommending that Republicans just stop holding town halls, which is both kind of brilliantly cynical and, like, of course that's what they're recommending. But the idea that then maybe neighboring districts with Democrats, the Democrat could go in and hold a hearing and listen to the people and take their complaints. Because government does a lot of important things. There are a few different types of things the American government does. One, which I think is at the root of Musk's anger, is it is the cop on the beat of corporate misconduct. So if Tesla's self-driving vehicles lead to death, the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, NHTSA — yes, government has a lot of complicatedly named acronyms that people speak as if everyone should know what they are, but, like, yeah, there's some place to make sure vehicles don't needlessly kill you. Musk had a lot of problems with the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, because they had concerns with how he was utilizing SpaceX, and so he got the head of the FAA canned. We've had some aviation disasters subsequent to that. We're having cuts at the FAA. You go on down the line, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the one to make sure the stock exchange is on the up and up. They've had huge problems because Elon Musk breaks securities law, you know, the way some of us break a diet, like, all the time. And He hates these agencies. So he is cutting them because a lot of what government does is try to protect us. And then other things government does is things like Social Security and Medicare and the military. So it keeps us safe and it, you know, moves money around to people who need it. But a lot of what it does is it reins in what rich people want to do.
No, and this for me is that educational opportunity. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me that working people would look to the richest guy on the planet and say, yeah, you know, I'm going to follow what he wants. I'm going to let him do whatever he wants. Sure, give him all of our information. Open, swing the doors open and give him and a bunch of high school kids full unfettered access to whatever they want. You know, in this hope that we're going to get this Doge refund check, which again I find cute as well. I'm amazed at the number of working people of this generation that are okay with that.
It's definitely alarming and disturbing. But I mean, the polling that I have been seeing suggests that Musk is already considerably less popular than Trump. And the trajectory is quite negative. I think ultimately speaking, the worse Musk becomes in terms of popularity, it will impact Trump. So I don't know that Musk as shield is going to be a brilliant strategy for Trump. But I do think disillusionment with Musk is increasing. I think he is somewhat aware of that, which is why his behavior has become, and I hesitate to say it becomes more erratic, because this man's been quite erratic for several years. It's not that recent a phenomenon. And I've seen some analyses of how he tweets, which suggests that this man does not sleep, which even if he were as smart as his fanboys believe, which I don't accept, but even if he had been like that at one point, you go as sleepless for as long as he is apparently going sleepless, your brain will rot regardless of the quality it began with.
But and you're hopped up on something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, there are all these reports of ketamine usage, and that's probably not, you know, all that he's on. I mean, Silicon Valley and significant drug usage, they're notoriously go well together or poorly. So yeah, I think Musk, yes, too many people are fanboys, but I think that they are fewer and fewer in number.
No, and this is where my, you know, because people are like, well, what are we going to do? What are Democrats doing? And sadly, Democrats haven't seemed to have a real message yet or a plan forward. There's some pockets of thought. But for me, I keep saying, look, the solutions will come out of the suffering caused by their savagery. That's been my line since Election Day. As the richest guy in the world shows us that we shouldn't have someone as wealthy as him with the kind of power, maybe we start taxing rich people again. When you start looking at the things that they want to do and what they want to destroy, maybe we start going, hey, maybe we need to hold on to that. So I see opportunity ahead more than I see the misery of some of my friends and colleagues.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is unfortunate how many people are going to be hurt in the interim, but I do think the metaphor that I've been hearing a lot is like the slingshot metaphor that we're going to get pulled back to a real amount. We're going to go backwards, but then we're going to go forward, hopefully, with much greater acceleration, and we'll slingshot into a better future. Unfortunately, despite Joe Biden doing a lot of things right in his administration, he did not prosecute the past. Like, literally, they belatedly and barely ever prosecuted Trump. And they did not go after Merrick Garland, did not have the courage of populist conviction that people like Chopra and Lina Khan and others had at other agencies. And so he didn't go after the corporate criminals. And this is like what's going to happen. But hopefully people learn the lesson and go hard in the next Democratic administration. And we can slingshot into a future in which rich people understand themselves to be subject to legal accountability.
Remember those days?
You know, it's funny because if you actually like read, there's a great book by Jesse Eisinger, The Chicken, I forget if we can curse on this, the Chicken Feces Club. And it's about how prosecutors fail to go after rich people and corporate elites who break the law. And I recommend the book highly, but it's a nuanced book. And it points out that kind of inexplicably, but George W. Bush's deputy attorney general at the beginning of his administration, this guy, Larry Thompson, was actually pretty good on going after corporate crimes. And so in the wake of Enron, they took Enron seriously. There were real prosecutions and there was enormous pushback. And that's part of like how we got to where we are, was the nature of the corporate America and legal elite, big law firm pushback to what Larry Thompson and the George W. Bush administration did. But it's not ancient history that America used to prosecute rich people who broke crimes. It's literally 21st century history, even if just barely so.
Yeah, no, everyone knows the one or two people from each of the financial crises of the past, the Michael Milkins and those folks. You know, I think I'm trying to remember the guy from Cincinnati, but there were a number of them in the savings and loan scandal.
Yeah, Charles Keating.
There you go, Keating. There were a number of those. At least you got one. There was nobody in 2009-10. Nobody.
Yeah, the savings and loan scandal, which was a huge deal, and like came out of a complicated financial deregulatory series of mistake after mistake, and interest rate changes were like a weird backdrop and had over similarities to what just happened a couple of years ago about Silicon Valley Bank, which, by the way, if we had not bailed out Silicon Valley Bank 2 years ago, probably Kamala Harris would be president, because these tech people would not have had the backing to go in as heavily as they did for Trump. It is ironic that the Biden administration bailed out the people who are the biggest enemies of the Democratic Party in 2025. And they did so in 2023. That was a mistake. But yeah, in the 1980s, savings and loans crisis, a ton of people went to prison. I think there were hundreds of people who were imprisoned as a result of the crimes that they were undertaking at these savings and loans institutions, which were supposed to be very staid community banks focused on residential housing.
Yeah, we have definitely lost our way. And the hope is that, you know, we come back to some bit of sanity. But Jeff, I appreciate the time, the work that you guys do over there at the Revolving Door Project. Hope folks will look at the website, therevolvingdoorproject.org. Jeff Hauser, thanks so much, man.
Love being here. Thanks for having me.
I want to hear your thoughts. Is he right? Maybe is that where it began, where rich people thought they were above the law? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that 27 Japanese women working in the Seattle public school system handed in their forced resignations. In the aftermath of the attacks on Pearl Harbor, anti-Japanese hysteria swept the United States, especially the West Coast. 127,000 people of Japanese ancestry were sent to live in 10 internment camps by executive order of President Roosevelt. Many of these U.S. citizens sold their homes and businesses, often for a fraction of their value, before they were forced to move. In Seattle, mothers from Gatewood Elementary School circulated a petition for the removal of Japanese office employees from the schools. The school district pressured the women to resign. Even James Sakamoto, the editor of the Japanese American Courier, encouraged the women to voluntarily leave their jobs. He met with the women at the newspaper's office and told them they should resign before they were fired. Faced with such pressure, the women wrote a resignation letter. They wrote, "Most of us have received our education in local schools and have been proud of the fact, as we have been proud of our positions as employees." Word of the resignations quickly became headline news in local newspapers. Several protests were held in support of the women. Students at the University of Washington circulated a petition on their behalf. They gathered more than 1,000 signatures, declaring the treatment of these office workers undemocratic, intolerant, disrespectful of the rights of American citizens. In 1986, the governor of Washington signed into law an admission of wrongdoing toward these women and payment of reparations for their forced resignations. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So look, you got to get out in the streets. Got to pay attention. Got to talk to your neighbors. Because understand, our fourth estate, our press, you're not getting any. I wouldn't bother at this point. We talked about it yesterday on the program, what Trump has done by basically just saying, anyone who I don't like, you're not getting access. Only the chosen, only the stenographer media is going to get in. Only the people who are going to take the questions that we give them to ask us are going to be able to get in. You know, the Fox, the Newsmax, the OANs, the crazy right-wing folks. And understand, I've been saying for years, give the right credit. They built the media structure that they wanted. They built a massive media empire, an echo chamber second to none, and they invest not just their resources, but their time, their messaging, and their praise in propping that up. Trump has done more for right-wing media than anybody because he does all of the shows. I joked, during the Jamie Harrison years, because we had reached out to Jamie Harrison right when he became DNC chair, said, hey, we're one of the bigger programs in the country who does this little thing that we do. We'd like to have you come on and talk to us. We'd like to get some of your thoughts on how you're going to fight for workers' rights, how you're going to get out there and push for minimum wage increase, how you're going to make life better for working people. And the response we got back was, oh, Jamie's got a podcast. And you go, that's not entirely what I asked, but Jamie's got a podcast. And we never did get anyone from there. And it's okay, because I'm not a huge fan anyway. I think that they can be a tool for good. I think they can help lead a message for working people. But Democrats have to find that. And that comes from a grassroots support. As I've said to you before, I don't believe in saviors. There are no political saviors. Politicians are tools to do what people want. What we need is a groundswell of people demanding better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, a future for their kids. And you do that through the mechanism of government with the tools of politicians to get there. And if they don't, then you vote the bums out. You don't put in people who want to destroy the government. You don't put in people who say, well, we'll happily burn your structure down. You're not getting what you need. You're not getting what you want. Here, let me burn it to the ground so you never get anything. That's not what I'm talking about. But it is kind of what we've done, isn't it? And we have given the torch to someone like Elon Musk, who will be very happy to torch employment in this country. Because, as I've said before, I believe he thinks we're already post-human worker. We're already all robots, all automation, all AI. We don't need humans. Let that sink in as you watch what Musk and Trump do to federal workers. As you watch the attack. And then you watch how pathetic our news media is. You take the thing that the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos saying I'm of America and for America and proud to be so. Our country didn't get here by being typical, and a big part of America's success has been freedom in the economic realm and elsewhere. Freedom is ethical, he says. It minimizes coercion and practical. It drives creativity, innovation, and prosperity. But evidently, freedom of the press is not part of this, because evidently, their editorial page will only talk about two topics: personal liberties and free markets. Anything else? Not. Nada. And what you got is you got the opinion section's editor, David Shipley, resigning. And good on him for doing it. Good, smart move. But here you go. The wealthy, they know what kind of country they want. And it's one where you don't have a voice or even the information to have a voice. This is why I keep saying, find each other. The suffering is going to give us an opportunity to organize. We're going to be able to commiserate. We're going to be able to pull together to help each other. There's going to be a moment. I'm optimistic. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. If you miss any portion of the video, freespeech.org. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Handing a legal setback to the Trump-Musk mass firings of federal probationary workers, a federal judge in San Francisco. He granted a temporary restraining order to labor unions and others who sued, saying the Office of Personnel Management has no authority to fire any but its own employees. British leader Keir Starmer at the White House today on a mission common to NATO allies. ABC News chief White House correspondent Mary Bruce.
The prime minister is now the second European leader just this week to come visit President Trump to make their case in person for why they believe it is so important that the U.S. continue to support Ukraine. Of course, we saw the French President Macron here earlier this week, though it certainly feels like it was longer ago than then. All of this leading up to this meeting tomorrow morning with Zelensky.
There are no initial signs of a natural gas leak or carbon monoxide in the home where Gene Hackman and his wife were found dead, say police in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This is ABC News. Iowa State lawmakers.